Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for July 26, 2022. I'm Nate Lindberg. I'll be your host for the evening as Kelly is watching the G1. He's doing the whole New Japan thing. So we're without Kelly tonight. But I do have with me Doc Bruce. Bruce, say hey.
Hey.
Okay, well, that's perfect. Again, as Kelly says, they don't call him the best color guy in the business for nothing, right? So we're here to talk about NXT 2.0. Let's take a look. I guess we'll just jump right in and take a look at the main event here. So the main event was an 8-man tag between the D'Angelo family and Diamond Mine. So we had two of the biggest factions in NXT kind of going head to head here. We did see the D'Angelo family pick up the win with Tony D'Angelo. Which creed was it? Was it Julius or it was Julius he pinned, right?
It's a pin, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. We pinned Julius Creed. For me, I think personally, I'm not a huge fan, and I've talked about this before. I'm not a huge fan of multi-man tag matches. This one was, kind of still chaotic, and it hit a lot of the same tropes for multi-man tag matches. But I still think they did a pretty good job with it here. The D'Angelo family coming out on top, I think, is going to play into the demise of Diamond Mind even more. My guess is Roderick Strong's going to be pretty pissed next week that they lost this match and probably get into it with the Creed yet again. So I kind of have a feeling this is like a bit more of an impetus for that inevitable breakup. They even mentioned it on commentary tonight as well. So it's kind of where I'm thinking this is going. There's also, too, like the Santos Escobar thing, too, right? Now, granted, the Angelo family, this is the first week that Legado del Fantasma actually seemed like enthusiastic to be part of the D'Angelo family. They weren't like, standoffish, or they didn't have this look on their face like, yeah, we're going to do this, but we don't want to do this. We're only doing this. We're only here beside you because we have to be. I think it was Del Cruz. It might've been Wild. I forget, but it was one of the two of them, actually even gave like that Italian, like hand gesture, I'm doing it right now, but nobody can see me because this is an audio podcast. But you kind of like hold your thumb next, in your fingers and like shake your hand in front of your face. So it's kind of interesting in that respect too. I thought both teams to start this match seemed like they were, cohesive units. They seemed like they were together. Obviously kind of saw Diamond Mine have a little bit of an issue towards the end there, which cost him the match. Bruce, your thoughts on this match and where this is going to go going forward?
As usual, it was just a chaotic match with that many people. And always towards the end, it's going to be just spamming finishers or high-impact moves. That's what we had here. Now, the sequence did lead to another bit of miscommunication between members of Diamond Mine, where Roderick Strong went for the pump or the leaping knee to Tony D'Angelo, only for D'Angelo to move and he hits Julius Creed. With how Roderick Strong's character has been portrayed these last couple months, he's definitely going to blame Julius Creed for getting in the way or not holding D'Angelo in place. And then I can see that leading to what I wrote is in my report that you can find at PW Torch or the VIP side right now, is that I just want them to have a 20-minute just banger of a match, a singles match, Roderick Strong versus Julius Creed, whenever the next PLE is. I don't want to have to sit through commercial breaks for that match. I want to be able to see that match in its entirety. Julius Creed just, that backstage segment before where they're getting for the match, he just continues to command the screen. His promos have just shot up. He's definitely just one of, to me, he's one of the best, he's one of my favorite people to watch work in the ring in NXT, and that continues. He just seems like he is ready to have the rocket strapped to his back, and I don't think they're on a breakup like this, but if we're comparing them to the Rockers, because everyone always gets compared to the Rockers, right now he's definitely the Shawn Michaels of the tag team. Regarding Wild and Cruz del Toro, not Del Cruz, as you said. That gave me a nice snicker earlier.
Yeah, I realized I said it after I said it.
I kind of noticed that too. And my thing is, are they really, is this, I think there hasn't been a story told as to why they suddenly, because even last week they were pissed at D'Angelo still. They haven't really told why all of a sudden Wilde and Del Toro started going in line and now are getting praised for their work. You know, in the backstage segment, D'Angelo once again praised Electra Lopez. And they've been constant since the beginning that she's been with the family just doing her work. So that's going to be interesting when Escobar comes back. But I'm wondering if they're truly with them or if this is a ploy to get D'Angelo to get his guard down when Escobar's ready to return and then they turn on D'Angelo and maybe they get Lorenzo to be in. I don't know. I'm just – my mind is working too far into the future looking at this. But like you said, they came out dressed even similarly to D'Angelo and Lorenzo. They do the mannerisms. They look proud, for lack of a better term, to be in that to be in that group tonight, which is a stark contrast again, just from just last week. The match itself was a fine main event. It hit all the spots you need for a TV main event to get people hyped and going. Sure, the faces didn't win, but there was a reason for that. There was a high speed sequence toward the end with all the finishers. So I think in terms of TV main event, it hit what it needed to do. I'm just not, as you are, not the biggest fan of these multi-person tag matches.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you there. They get a little bit too chaotic sometimes. So, all right, cool. So I was going to say let's go over to the phone lines, but we actually don't have anybody that's looking to talk. So if you do, if you are listening and you do want to jump into the conversation, feel free to press 1 on your keypad, and that'll put a nice little hand up next to your phone number and let me know that you want to be on the show. If in the future you do want to join, if you listen to the recording of this, you can also call us at 515-605-9345 when we go live, which is typically about 20 minutes after NXT gets off the air. Today was a little bit later. Apologize for that. You could also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And that is exactly what Zach Barber did. Zach Barber says, fellas, NXT 2.0 exists because the previous iteration of NXT didn't jive with, I guess. He didn't quite put something in there, but I'm going to put jive with Vince's main roster vision. Now that the disgraced former CEO is out and under federal investigation again, Triple H holds the creative reins. With the game in charge now, wouldn't it make sense for him to start his creative regime by rolling back some of the worst changes made to NXT, such as the garish Nickelodeon color scheme, the shallow sexualized toxic attraction gimmick, and removing people who don't belong in national TV. I'm looking at you, Lash Legend and Von Wagner. Perhaps he can even restart his indie recruitment system instead of solely relying on the Next in Line program to bring in prospective talent. Bringing NXT closer to what it was before will at least make the show more watchable. Zach from Texas. So I would love to see it, personally. I'd love to see NXT kind of start reverting back to the way things were about a year ago, year and a half ago, black and gold. I don't see it happening. NXT now has more of a purpose than it has in the past. Well, I don't want to say it has more of a purpose than it has in the past. Its purpose has changed. It originally was developmental, and then it was meant to be a third brand, and now we're kind of back to developmental again. I can see it changing a little bit, and maybe, you know, we start getting a couple more indie talent or you know, you kind of see Triple H's prints again on the brand, but I don't think that the garish color scheme's going away anytime soon. I think that's kind of here to stay.
I don't think it's bad either. I think it's fine.
It's okay.
It's more modern than the black and gold. That's
what I don't like about the tie-dye color scheme is WWE always ties a color to their brands. Raw is red. SmackDown's blue. Velocity was green. You know, Heat was orange. Like, your main event, you've got blue and red. Superstars, you had silver. Like, there's always a color associated with each one. And NXT was always black and gold. So it's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just a weird OCD thing for me. I don't know. But, like, I just wish there was, like, a primary color associated with the brand and that kind of, you know, found itself throughout the arena and everything, rather than it just being crazy tie-dye 90s Nickelodeon colors. But that's just me. That's like a personal preference. I can see why they kind of went in that direction. I mean, it's more of a I think it's probably more popular pick nowadays, you know, with the young kids than like the black and gold metal, you know. I mean, there was always also like a lot of metal. And I don't mean like iron, I mean music, but a lot of imagery as well, you know, like a lot of skulls and things like that. So as much as, you know, I mean, I'm a bit of a metalhead, so like I was cool with it, but it's not for everybody. I think this iteration of NXT, the presentation of it is designed to be more for everybody. And kind of not necessarily like single out some like, you know, metalheads and things like that. But that's kind of neither here nor there. Long story short.
Kind of on that point though, the celebrities that WWE brings in to work with, how many of them are metalheads?
Of them.
Well, I mean, how many of them are metal artists?
Some of them, but again, lately, not many of them.
Like the last few I can think of, like there's Logan Paul, there's Bad Bunny. I don't think Poppy's metal, but Poppy's closer to than anybody else. Even Machine Gun Kelly doesn't fit there. So like there's, aside from the appearances of like, you know, Motorhead in the crowd when Triple H was running NXT or something, there's really, I think Triple H is at a point now where he understands that if you want to have the widest audience or the biggest audience, then just catering to people like you, which is fine, is not going to be the best path for growth.
You did say the widest audience, correct?
Did I say widest or did I say the? I don't remember what I said.
I think you said why. I couldn't tell if you said whitest or widest, and I was like, I really hope you said widest.
I definitely wasn't whitest because then he would just do the same thing he's doing. He did in NXT.
Right. but no, I think it's certainly a fair point. But long story short, like his kind of just going back to the general question here, like I can see some of like Triple H's influence coming back to NXT. You know, hell, even tonight, like, you know, for instance, Grayson Waller, he had that right before his match, he had this backstage like vignette kind of promo where he was staring straight at the camera. And like, that's what Vince hates that. Vince hated when you looked into the camera. And I mean, people do it. It happened and stuff. But I mean, I actually, you know what? I guess Lash Legend did a promo like that a couple weeks ago, too. I don't know, but like the Waller's thing stood out to me as like, you know, a small little change that might have been influenced by Triple H, but
Wendy Chu as well.
Yeah, Wendy Chu. God, that whole Wendy Chu vignette tonight actually kind of like
was jarring.
I'm not gonna lie. It was jarring. It was like, okay, maybe we're getting Mei Ying back here, but we're not talking about Wendy Chu right now. Any other thoughts on Zach's question?
So I feel like some of the changes that have been made are definitely going to stick. I have the color scheme, the look, the presentation. You know, watching last night, Pritchard is definitely still in charge of camera work because the cuts kept happening back and forth all over again.
You mean Dunn?
Or I thought Dunn was whoever was in charge of the damn camera stuff.
That'd be Dunn.
Because it was still there. And then I feel like what NXT is right now is what it's going to remain. I don't think, even when NXT was black and gold and had all those darlings from the independent scene, before AEW came around, before the switch to USA in 2 hours, it was still doing developmental. I mean, there were still characters during that run that were still developmental, whether you want to look at people like Lacey Evans, No Way Jose, Elias for a little bit of time, right? There were still people that were there, still teams that were around that were developmental. So it's not like that part of NXT ever went away. It just didn't become the sole focus anymore during Black and Gold. So this this regression back to basically being almost exclusively developmental is definitely going to stay, I think. It's what one reason is with all the releases that have happened, it's going to take a while for the depth to rebuild itself to where you can be more than just developmental, whether it's NXT or even if you just get Raw and SmackDown right now, there's a bit of a lack of depth in pretty much every division. The other thing, though, is I don't know if you saw, but there was a Fightful Select report that came out today with a bunch of quotes from people who have left WWE and NXT over the past 3, 4, 5 years or something like that. And almost every single one of them said that if Triple H was in charge of creative when they had their contracts come up or they left, that they would have thought much more harder about re-signing with WWE or not have left at all. There are some free agents apparently who are saying that now that Vince is out of power and Triple H is in charge, that they're more likely to listen to WWE's offer. So that builds off my last point, because it seems like Triple H being in charge is making it more likely that people want to come to WWE, and not just people that grew up watching and want to be, you know, the next WWE champion or women's champion like Roxanne Perez and whatnot, but those who were established and have skills. One of the big names that people took from that report, not that I think if there's any accuracy to it or not, but Johnny Gargano's still out there. I think it's more likely for him to re-sign with NXT now that Triple H is in charge than if Vince was still in charge. I think it Candice LeRae is much more likely, you know, to re-sign with WWE than if Vince was still in charge. People that have left, I'm sure that, you know, people like Keith Lee or Swerve would still be around if Triple H had been in charge and Vince had let them go, Vince and, of course, McCon. So I think with all that said, the changes are going to be gradual and subtle and has to do more with the depth and the quality of the product than I think the presentation of the product.
All right. And with that, let's actually go over to the phone lines and talk with area code 816. So I'm trying to get you on the show right now. You should have just heard unmuted, and go ahead, state your name, where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Greg. I'm in Missouri, and my first time calling into the PWT Talks NXT show. I'm calling to wait till first time calling into this show. I thought with the maybe reset, maybe not reset, for various reasons, that I would give the full show a shot tonight and get my thoughts on it, because for the last number of months, I've mainly just been keeping up on a few specific performers and not watching the shows. So I guess for me, with the much like with Raw last night, it's going to take a little bit to see the real changes seeping in, but for somebody who watched the first full show in quite a while, I thought it wasn't great. I mean, it was pretty solid. I thought there was good wrestling, and there were positive developments with women's tag team.
Greg, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but we're having a hard time hearing you. There's like a lot of wind coming through. I'm having a hard time understanding. No, that's okay.
I'm sorry. Hear me. That is fine.
He's rushing to try and make the wind go away.
Sorry.
Nope, not a problem, man. Not a problem.
Okay. Is this better?
Yeah, that's much better. That's much better.
Okay, great. I've got about 10 minutes in here before this place closes. So there were positive developments. The women's tag team title was a positive development. There was the Go Team Ninja. I think it's time for them to be champions. There was positive developments with Wendy Chu, and among other things, it was solid wrestling. I mean, most of the matches, I mean, Indy Hartwell and Ariana Grace is what it was, but most of the wrestling was solid, and for my first time seeing some of the characters, I mean, Chase University, like, it's so corny and silly, but, like, there's an appealing part to it. I don't know what it is. It's like, I guess the performers have so much enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. So it's, I mean, I thought the show was pretty solid for what it was. And, you know, I'll check it out again here in the coming weeks. But for me, my if you guys don't mind, this is my first time calling in. I have a lot of thoughts. I mean, I'll speak quick, but I have a few thoughts about the brand as far
by
as
all, means,
all of this goes with Triple H. And because to me, my opinion is that obviously we're in the majority that NXT was a better product for years in terms of compared to the WWE main roster product. But my personal opinion is that, and feel free to disagree with this, there was a sense almost, I almost got the feeling that it kind of became a vanity project in terms of like bringing in all of these Ring of Honor independent stars and putting them in these highly touted takeover shows that got this all this love and adoration. It may have been something that, you know, made people like Vince unhappy. We don't know the details on it. There have been rumblings of that. But I get the sense that the way the overhaul took place, I mean, obviously there was a lot of good talent that was let go that you could find a place for. But I feel like the overhaul is more of what probably should be. And earlier it was pointed out that there were developmental talents in the old NXT system, but I think that this right here, we can have a very solid mixture of actual Bianca Belair-type stud athletes like Tiffany Stratton, whose talent is pretty hard to ignore as much as she's developing, and then the likes of your Roxanne Perez's or your Grayson Waller's and your Giovanni Vinci, the former Fabian Aichner. There's, I feel you could really, that maybe one of the things he could do here effectively along with Shawn Michaels is mesh those together, because one of the negative effects I think of a lot of the solid wrestlers leaving or being phased out is that there's not a lot, it's not as much for the younger up-and-comers who are transitioning from other sports to solid talent to work with. And I think that this could, you could put more of an emphasis on maybe bringing some elements of that back with the combination of, like, if Triple H is going to see, I could see him seeing the value in both of people like Tiffany Stratton as well as people like Roxanne Perez. So I think that there's a lot of room for optimism here, and maybe a mixture slash hybrid of what made NXT special in the first place and this newer vision of building up athletes and non-wrestlers, but then also still, like, bringing in wrestlers when it would be and maybe creating a good mix of both. And so there's a lot to figure out, though, in terms of who's working out and who it's not working out with that they'll have to figure out. But there's optimism that this could be a good project going forward in terms of that combining of these elements. And that's how I see it, at least.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, obviously, first, thanks for the call. Thanks for tuning in and being a first time caller. A lot of talking points. So I'm trying to think of where to even start. Right now, there's just so much up in the air about what's going to happen with NXT in the next handful of months. One thing, Wade said and other people have said, is we don't really expect to see a whole hell of a lot of changes immediately. We're probably going to see some of these changes happen gradually. And I really sincerely hope that with NXT, we wind up coming into something what you're talking about where in the next few months, next few months to a year, it becomes a bit, I don't want to say less of a developmental show, because I feel like they need a developmental show. I mean, heck, when NXT wasn't becoming wasn't really a developmental show anymore, they were talking about like NXT Evolve, and creating that, or whatever, I think they were going to call it NXT Evolve, but whatever it was, to create like an undercard show, something similar to like Level Up is now, for that show. What I would like to see is it still be, like what you're talking about, still see a little mix of developmental mixed with, kind of the NXT black and gold era, have some indie talent come back and make it so it's a little bit more of a melting pot than just solid new talent that you're picking up from, football teams or, cheerleading squads, bodybuilding competitions, what have you. That's at least what I would like to see. I feel like when you're just trying to develop talent and you've taken talent that doesn't have any wrestling experience, you're trying to develop them and mold them, you get a lot of cookie cutter athletes, right? I really and truly believe when you get a bunch of indie talent guys into NXT and into that system, they're also not only are they learning the WWE way, but they're also kind of teaching other things, and you know, kind of, I don't want to say like the non WWE way, but like, you know, teaching other things and to some of these new guys that, you know, don't have any experience. So you kind of get a bit of a different mix of matches and things like that, where you, instead of just kind of like cookie cutter athletes and cookie cutter wrestlers. So there's a lot to kind of talk about. And I'm sure there's a bunch of talking points that I even mentioned at this point, but before I continue rambling on, Bruce, let's get some of your thoughts here.
I don't have too much else to add. I will say that once it was announced, Triple H was taking over creative, there were memes going around of, this will warm your heart, Tommaso Ciampa holding up both titles at the end of WrestleMania. Because we all know that Tommaso Ciampa is Triple H's son. So, yeah. I just think that we kind of already have what you're describing in terms of some of the wrestlers that are there, like Alba Fire, for example, who's there. We kind of had that with some of the wrestlers coming down with Natalya and Dolph Ziggler and whatnot. So I think that what they're doing right now, again, is probably what it's going to end up being. I do wonder if now that Triple H is head of creative, specifically of Raw and SmackDown, Shawn Michaels is still going to be in charge of NXT while Triple H might have some. The buck might stop with Triple H, but Shawn Michaels is going to be the hands-on day-to-day person there. So I wonder if a lot of those wrestlers who would have looked at NXT as where they wanted to be are now going to look at the main, you know, Raw and SmackDown as more appealing because of Triple H being creative and not Vince. There's less likely of a chance for them to be stuck into a stereotypical gimmick or something based off a quirk that Triple H or Vince McMahon finds in you, like, oh, you're short, which isn't even a quirk, or like, oh, you can dance or juggle. I don't know what it might be. You know, Vince has these get-ups about having gimmicks based off of these one-note things. I think with that potential being gone, there might not be as many who would look to NXT first and might ask to sign with Raw and SmackDown instead. So that's going to be an interesting development to see who does sign with WWE now and if they go to NXT or not. And those who did have a connection with NXT before, will they go to NXT or will they sign for Raw and SmackDown? I think that's going to be an interesting wrinkle to watch for as we move forward.
Yeah, I agree. That actually will be. I kind of seem to think people are still going to wind up going through NXT, but it's so hard to look through a lens that doesn't involve Vince McMahon. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But Greg, I know you were standing in a business is about to close. Are there any other points you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I'm kind of quick here. With hindsight, there has to be a part of some people within WWE who wish this had happened before the alternative was launched that was able to lure away both the talent that was released and the talent that got fed up and decided to leave. So, I mean, like, with benefit of hindsight, it's like, you know, if some of this stuff had happened 4 or 5 years ago, I mean, I can't imagine, like, going into the future, like, you know, all the consequences of this other company coming along that did appear to be a true alternative to NXT that was still as unique and as good of a product as it was still part of this same WWE system where all the talent had this to look forward to, like, once they got called up. And it was interesting what was mentioned just now, because I believe that guys like Gargano and Adam Cole and Ciampa, it was rumored that they did not want to leave NXT, and they were actually lobbying to stay there forever, I mean, if the reports were correct. And so, like, obviously not I don't think that may not be as much of a problem going forward, but like, I cannot see a scenario where like Adam, where all these guys leave. I mean, of course you had some were business decisions. Like I'd be trying to bring back Dakota Kai if she was interested in returning. Cause I believe it was her choice to leave.
Oh, hell yeah.
She didn't too much to really look forward to in WWE main roster, and I guess you can't blame her for that. With the benefit of hindsight, with Toni Storm, I've had her passion for, she says, like, passion for wrestling basically sucked out of her by WWE. Would that have happened if Triple H had been in control of the main roster rather than what was going on? I don't know, but these are interesting questions. And I believe that I know he's in AEW right now. He's a tag team champion. He's probably signed into a multi-year contract, but Swerve Strickland, it was not his decision to leave. I believe they were all released, and it may have been because of the actions of one of the members of Hit Row, if the rumors are correct. And so it's going to be very interesting with some of these contracts come up, both of some of the established AEW talents and the former WWE guys who might be interested in giving the company another chance with a change in power.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, this is something like, Wade went into it at length over the past few days. He talked about it on one of the Wade's Focus on WWE shows. And I think he also went into it on the SmackDown post show. But there's a lot of talent that he's talked to that, both former talent and current talent, if memory serves, that are saying that, it's kind of a different vibe backstage. There's a lot of people that are, they're kind of, I guess, sad to see Vince go, but also glad to see Vince go, because, like you're bringing up, that they're not going to have to put up with a lot of the stuff that Vince has kind of subjected them to over the years. So this is going to be very interesting, going forward to see not only how the company winds up progressing and kind of running, and, are Triple H and Stephanie going to be, and Nick Khan, for that matter, are they going to be quite as hands-on as Vince, where, everything has to go through them, or are they going to actually trust some of the people under them that they put in, put into those positions to actually make some decisions and things like that? Which I, in a way, kind of hope that's the case, because I feel like that's going to take some pressure off of, Trips, Steph, and Nick Khan, and kind of give them time to focus on, more important things, than like t-shirts and stuff. This is all going to, be very, very interesting, especially, like you said, come with a lot of these contracts coming up at some point. Who will wind up coming back or maybe coming into the company that you never thought of in the first place? Sasha and Naomi, they walked out of the company strictly because of issues with Vince. At least it's, again, from what the rumor mills and from what I've heard anyway, it's primarily with issues with Vince. I mean, that opens the door for them to come back. There's so much that is going to happen. It's funny because, man, you thought Vince was never going to go away, and here we are. And it's like, at least from an analysis perspective, it's really hard for me to try and look at this company through a lens that does not involve Vince. It's going to be interesting. Bruce, any follow up on that?
Just about it. I do think that even if this happened in 2016, 2017, whenever it might have happened before AEW, I think AEW still would have happened, because there were enough people, wrestling fans, who, regardless of how good NXT was, would not watch WWE. And enough people that, as we saw during the time that both were on air, drew a lot more to AEW than did to NXT. So I think regardless of what would have happened, there are a lot of wrestlers in AEW who have flat out said that growing up, they didn't have a dream to wrestle in WWE. They had a dream to be a professional wrestler. And so there are going to be those wrestlers still. And there would have been those when, in 20, whatever, if Vince would have retired earlier. So I don't think that him retiring earlier would have somehow either delayed or negated the formation of AEW. I think it still would have happened. Would AEW be as popular? I'm not sure, because I think there'd be if we're looking at a hindsight, an alternate universe or something, I think with Triple H being in charge at the time, there'd be a which would be good for the wrestlers, there'd be a bigger battle over some of the talent that were coming up as free agents, because not necessarily the philosophy so much, but the style of wrestling that Triple H and Tony Khan were kind of signing were similar to a lot of there's a lot of overlap between the talents that they were signing in terms of their in-ring styles. So I think there would have been more competition for that if Triple H was in charge, which, again, would be good for the wrestlers because they could get higher prices, higher contracts, and whatnot. They could get more flexible contracts, So, yeah, I think if we're looking back, that still would have happened. But it would be a good thought exercise to see what have changed in WWE over the last, let's say, 3 years if Triple H were in charge in terms of the booking decisions, in terms of the cuts, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that's all I'll add to that point.
All right. Greg, anything else, or should we let you continue on your walk?
Yeah, I'll get ready to wrap up here, but just to follow up on that point, I think he's absolutely right that there were these guys who did not want to be part of WWE, and I wonder what that culture and atmosphere was like before Triple H really set up NXT and really started, like, getting all these Ring of Honor guys and getting all these guys from other companies. I wonder what that was. But you always would have, like, your Young Bucks who did listen to a WWE offer and turned it down, or your Omegas who may not, like, just dream their entire lives of working for WWE or see a different philosophy for wrestling. But I think I was more referring to in terms of, like, people within the WWE system who just got fed up and left. I wonder how many of those guys would still be around now if it wasn't for a combination of booking, getting them getting sick of the booking, and also business decisions that Vince and, I guess, Nick Khan were ultimately behind. Because I would imagine there was definitely a part of people like Triple H that were not thrilled with some of the changes that took place, to say the least. And no one will talk publicly about that, but, like, it's go ahead.
The thing is, some of those people you brought up too, they weren't doing well in NXT when Triple H was still in charge. Like, people like Toni Storm, and she was great in Stardom, but she never did anything for me in NXT, even when Triple H was in charge. Like, there are people that just didn't even that didn't mesh well, I guess, with Triple H while he was in charge of NXT too. So it's not like all those people would have been better off regardless. I just think that I even had, you know, Rich Fan, Chris Maitland, and myself had a long group chat yesterday because Rich and I are a little more high on Triple H taking over as creative, and Chris wasn't. But I also don't want us to get so optimistic that we fail to see the pitfalls that could happen here with Triple H in charge. Not every wrestler that went through NXT was successful. Not every wrestler that went through NXT had good relationships with Triple H. So to think that just because he's back in charge now, that even those that were floundering under him would still be doing okay, I think is a bit rose-colored glasses, I guess, to look back on it. Because, again, like, Swerve was great, but Blake, he was still slotted in at a certain level, and he never got beyond that because of how they viewed him. And so I think it's okay to be a little more critical here, even if you are optimistic, which I am, of Triple H taking over.
That's more than fair.
Feel free. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll wrap up here. I'll let you guys go. But my last thought will be, I think that's definitely a more than fair assessment. Although for me personally, I'd argue that, I mean, I don't think Tony and Strickland are that much better off in AEW, but that's another topic for another day. But I think that definitely
they're not.
You know, once I get a little bit of time to process this more, like seeing the criticisms and flaws, because I'm not traditionally a Triple H fan. I mean, for my reasons personally of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon and some of their, or Triple H and the way maybe he behaved in the past. But I mean, he still did the complete 180 from how he treated people, supposedly was said to have treated people like CM Punk, to then bringing in, like, the CM Punk type guys as the prototypes for his for what I call his vanity project, which I think it became in some ways. So I'll leave you guys with that, and I'll check back in the future as we continue to watch this transition take place. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Greg. Thank you very much. Please do. Hope to hear from you again.
That's the other thing, Nate. A lot of people are letting their opinions of Triple H, the wrestler, kind of get in the way of their opinions of Triple H now. And there's definitely a difference between Triple H when he was the wrestler versus Triple H when he was in charge of NXT. And while I do think he could get a bit too paternalistic and a bit too, look at me, I'm the proud papa in every single photo, because that's me, that's a bit, in terms of the vanity, I think there was some of that. I do think we have to understand that just like Stephanie McMahon, just like Shawn Michaels especially, think back when he was like in the 90s, they've matured and taken on different aspects and roles regarding professional wrestling that I believe they have done for the better. So I understand, like, Triple H isn't one of my favorite wrestlers either. I think he's a little bit too plodding, matches always 20 minutes too long, always the same formula, etc. But if we look at what he did as an executive in charge of NXT, again, not everybody was a success, but his years in NXT, especially that run from about 2014 to 2018 or so, was looked at as some of the best 4 years of professional wrestling history. So we need to, you know, the separation should be made, but I understand why people might not be able to make it as much.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree. I completely agree with you. I mean, you know, when he was a wrestler, I mean, he was always politicking. I mean, you know, he was always trying to get himself in a better spot, things like that. So, yeah, I think it is kind of hard for people sometimes to keep that out of their head in terms of, you know, and kind of just think about him as an executive. I think that is, you know, it's definitely a fair point. As an executive, like I mean, I don't remember hearing like anything that like I disagreed with that he necessarily, you know, that he did. I mean, granted, you know, we're not part of the company. It's not like we're getting company memos or we're dealing with them on a daily basis or anything like that. But from, you know, from everything I've heard about how his management style, how he deals with people, how he takes the time with people, I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a big thing for him. This is going to be a good opportunity for him. And I think it's going to be a good opportunity for not just the wrestlers, but the entire company. I think it's also going to, with Vince gone, it's going to put, like, relieve a lot of pressure on people. I mean, Vince was like, you know, he worked 24/7, you know, he slept for like 3 or 4 hours a day. I don't think I don't know if Triple H can do that. I don't know if he's healthy enough to do that, you know, with everything, with his heart stuff, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, be down on him or anything like that. But I mean, you know, I don't want to see the man, you know, keel over and die. I appreciate Triple H and, you know, everything he's done for the business, the company. He's, again, not one of my favorite wrestlers, but in terms of wrestling minds, I feel like he's one of the better, you know, one of the greater ones in the business at the moment. So I am very optimistic about everything right now, down in NXT, within WWE as a whole. I think under Triple H and creative, I'm hoping we're about to go back into like a WWE wrestling boom. You know, and I think there's something you brought up a little while ago, you know, gimmicks, or Vince always just kind of saw everybody, you know, oh, hey, you can rap. All right, you're going to be a rapper. And then, you know, the original John Cena was born. You know, things like that.
Well, that was Stephanie McMahon, actually.
I know. As I was saying it, I'm like, oh, it was actually Stephanie, but I'm just going to keep talking. But still, you know, he'd find out that you had one thing, and then he turned that into, you know, into your gimmick, like you're saying. And I don't think Triple H is really like that. I mean, down in, you know, back in the Black and Gold NXT, Triple H's baby, there weren't many characters quite like that just kind of had like one note. I guess, yeah, in a way there were. I mean, Bailey kind of, sort of, maybe.
No Way Jose, Sparkle, Adam Rose.
Yeah, but like I feel like they were fewer and further between than they are now and on the main roster and under Vince.
Generally used to be sort of intro characters for people who didn't have much experience, I think, or at least WWE experience, to kind of become familiar and comfortable. That's what it seemed like to me, thinking back on it, like Alexa Bliss, Bayley's first gimmick, even Sasha Banks. They kind of all had these kind of not stereotypical, but one note gimmicks until
they evolved.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm hoping, you know, is we'll see a lot more of that. I had another point that I wanted to make, and it completely escaped. completely escaped my brain, but that's okay. Don't worry about it. I like the back and forth banter. All right, so let's actually go back to the mailbag real quick and see what other topics we can hit. So let's go to Kevin Catani's email. Kevin says, "Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I just saw a story that said that now that Triple H is in charge of talent and creative, we might see Johnny Gargano come back. On a scale of not on your life to see you next week, what do you think our chances are? Thanks as always, go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over." As a plug for 8YB, if you do go VIP, listen to NXT 8 years back with Kelly and Tom Stout, where they talk about NXT 8 years ago. So there's that. Kelly's not here to plug it, so I'll do it for him. So we kind of talked a little bit about Johnny Gargano earlier in the night. I think that a week ago when Vince was still in the company, it was on a scale of, I guess I'm going to use a scale of 1 to 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it was maybe a good 4 or 5 that we'd see Johnny come back. I think it's much higher now. I'd say maybe 6 or 7 out of 10 that we see Johnny and Candace come back to NXT or WWE as a whole. There's part of me that wants to actually see them come back, especially now that the Triple H is in charge of creative, have Johnny and Candace come back, or at least Johnny come back on the main roster and rekindle a feud with Ciampa and do it on a main roster, on a main stage with more eyeballs on it. They had an amazing, amazing feud. What was that, back in 2018, 2019, something like that. It was incredible. One of my favorite feuds of all time. And I would love to be able to see them perform and perform together on a main stage. So that's really what I hope. But I think, yeah, now that Triple H is in charge, there's a much higher chance we'll see Gargano and LeRae, for that matter, back in the company. Bruce?
Not much else to add to what I said earlier about the two of them.
Well, all right. So let's take that then and go to JB's email. JB says, "Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. With news breaking yesterday, Triple H taking over full creative control of WWE, what does that mean for NXT 2.0? Obviously, I don't expect a shift back to black and gold, but we could slowly start seeing some changes back that way in terms of booking. Also, what 2.0 wrestler or faction that saw extremely limited or no time in black and gold would you like to see being the most successful in a black and gold like NXT? Love the show and go VIP." I think we really kind of talked about most of this for the majority of it, with the exception of his question at the end, which was, again, what current 2.0 wrestler or faction that saw extremely limited or no time in black and gold would you see being the most successful in black and gold like NXT? I think probably, well, I guess I was going to say Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes did see some time in black and gold. Extremely limited time in black and gold. So that was, I'm going to say it's going to be, for me, Carmelo Hayes. But on JB's email, Bruce.
I'm honestly confused by the question, so I don't have an answer for that one.
Well, okay then. Sounds good to me. So we'll go kind of gloss over that a little bit. Sorry, JB, but you got my answer anyway. And so let's go, and we already talked a little bit about the main event. Let's try to get through this kind of quick because both Bruce and I have had a very long day, completely separately, but it's getting bedtime. It's going to be bedtime. All right.
For you.
Well, for me. Yeah, that's right. You're in friggin' Hawaii. I'm always jealous when you remind me you're in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know. Anyway. So we started with D'Angelo Family and Diamond Mine. Let's go to the opener here. And that was Wes Lee versus Grayson Waller. So we did see Grayson Waller pick up the win here. I actually really enjoyed this match. Wes Lee, I'm really liking his journey and his story here to kind of find himself as a singles competitor. We thought, you know, he might have had the win a couple times here tonight. Trick Williams wound up coming out and he was hiding in the crowd and attacked Wes Lee, which kind of allowed Grayson Waller to pick up the win. So I kind of liked it because, you know, Wes Lee may have lost, but he didn't lose clean. So at least he's got that in his back pocket to kind of you come back with next week and give him a little bit more fire to maybe come back at Grayson Waller with or something like that. But what I thought was really interesting about this match wasn't necessarily the people in the match or anything like that, but this is the third week in a row that I can remember where they kicked off the show with an absolute banger of a match. I think it's a great way to start the show, get people invested, get people involved, get eyes, you know, if people are just flipping the channels at 8 o'clock, you know, Eastern time, and they happen across it, you know, and they see a great match, maybe they'll stick around. I think this is it was a great placement on the card for the match. I think both of them did a fantastic job here, and I'm really sold on Wes Lee, and I never thought I would say that. I mean, I know Bruce, I know you remember when, you know, MSK was a thing. I don't even remember his partner's name at this point.
Nash Carter.
Nash Carter, thank you. When Nash Carter was still around, I did not really like MSK. They just didn't really do anything for me. But Wes Lee with this new gimmick and his, you know, this kind of journey that he's on, like I'm there for it, and I'm enjoying it. I'm hoping that we see him kind of overcome the odds sooner rather than later. Bruce on Grayson Waller and Wes Lee.
Best match of the night. Well, depending on how you look at the 8-man tag, this was the singles match of the night. And I've long been on the Wes Lee train. I liked him in Impact. I didn't like MSK, but once he went solo and went and had those vignettes, I was quickly on his train. You know that I've long been a strong supporter of Grayson Waller as a future heel, kind of another kind of Miz character on Raw or SmackDown. So that was you know, this match was what you expected it to be. I will say it was a little cute having the Trick Williams interfere in the boxing gear and then punching Wesley. You know, in real time it looked like in the back, but on the replay they kind of showed it to be the back of the neck to kind of knock him out. And then I do like that it didn't lead directly to the finish, that he made it back in, but then he ate the finisher real quick to then be pinned. So obviously this is extending the story between all four of these men. They've been kind of embroiled with each other for a few weeks now, and I'm guessing that, you know, Lee's lost now to, I believe, Trick Williams and Grayson Waller in singles matches. I wonder if we get a triple threat match out of this. I wonder if we get a handicap match out of this. I did note that this is the rare NXT where we didn't see nor hear Carmelo Hayes. It stood out a lot more to me than when Bron Breakker misses the show, for example. And I
Especially
think that
a good
speaks
point.
To the star power of Carmelo Hayes, to the potential that we see in him, and to how much he just demands your attention whenever he's on the screen, whether it's actually in the ring with a promo, a match, or doing something like the barbershop vignettes. So just wanted to make note of that. His absence to me was felt. Not to say the show was bad, but I do think it lacked a little bit of energy and flair because of Hayes being absent. And also, not to rain on your parade, Nate, but the show opened with a Zoe Stark promo.
Yeah, I guess it did open with the Zoe Stark promo, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, okay. This was the opening match. It was the opening match. All right, cool. So, well, while we're here, let's talk about the Zoe Stark promo then. So Zoe kicked off the show, as I was just informed. Zoe kicked off the show and basically, you know, kind of reintroduced herself to the crowd, you know, because she hadn't actually had a live mic in her hand last week when she came back to the Battle Royal. And basically, you know, just kind of talked about, you know, her trials and tribulations and thinking that she wasn't going to be coming back for almost a year. And she made it back, what was it, I think 9 or 10 months, something like that.
4 months, so 8 months.
Okay, 8 months. Yeah, math was never my strong suit.
Mine either.
Yeah, you know, I was great at math, and then they threw letters in there, and I was like, what the hell? Anyway, not that I had to do algebra for that. But Zoe Stark, she came out, and she was kind of, you know, reintroducing herself to the crowd and talking about how she won the Battle Royal last week and things like that. Cora Jade came out and started talking a little bit on the that platform that's above the crowd there. You know, and they eventually kind of settled on a match. Toxic Attraction came out basically said that they're never Zoe Stark's never going to take the title away from Mandy Rose. Gigi Dolan set a challenge to face Zoe Stark tonight, basically to just try to like whittle her down a little bit for Mandy Rose during their match at Heat Wave, which we learned is the name of the next PLE tonight. So yeah, Zoe Stark, I gotta say, I think she delivered a great promo tonight. I've been trying to remember how I felt about her on the mic, you know, like a year ago before she got injured, and I'm kind of coming up short. I think like I was still high on her mic skills, but like not completely sold. But I don't fully remember, to be honest. Tonight, I thought she was great out there. One of the first things out of her mouth was, I forget exactly what she said, but I mean, she was like super enthusiastic about it. She got the crowd behind her. She didn't sound like she was, you know, being scripted or anything like that. It sounded like it was from the heart. I really need to give her a lot of credit there. The other one that I want to give credit is Gigi Dolan. Gigi is, I think she's probably the best talker in Toxic Attraction, but I feel like she was even better than normal tonight during that segment. So I definitely want to give her some props there as well. I think we're going to wind up seeing, we are going to wind up seeing Mandy Rose versus Zoe Stark. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Zoe Stark might actually take the title off of Mandy Rose. I could be wrong, but I think I want to see, I'm going to say that for right now, that Zoe Stark should take the title off her, but I do want to see who winds up winning the Battle Royal next week, or the Fatal Four Way rather, next week for the number one contenders for the tag team titles, because if it is Toxic Attraction that wins, and they wind up winning their titles back, then I don't think Mandy Rose is going to lose, and they'll probably put all the gold back on Toxic Attraction. That's just my thought.
Isn't the Fatal 4-Way next week for the actual Women's Tag Team Championship and not for number one contender?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Because, yeah, it's not like she can defend the title by herself. And by she, I mean Roxy. Yeah, so you're right. It's not for the number one contender. It's for the actual title themselves. So if Toxic Attraction does wind up winning that, then I'm going to say Mandy Rose is going to wind up retaining against Zoe Stark. If they lose, I'm going to say Zoe may end up going over. It may not have anything to do with one another, but I think at least a perception for Toxic Attraction, they want some gold on them. More or less at all times. At least that's kind of what it seems like this past year. So anyway, on Zoe Stark, actually, I guess you can also talk about Zoe Stark versus Gigi Dolan as well. I didn't get into it, but if you want to get into it, feel free.
Sure. Zoe Stark came out full of energy. The first thing she said to what you were saying was, you don't know how good it feels to be back inside this ring. So and then she repeated it again just to make sure it got over to the crowd, because she kind of gritted her teeth and said it the first time because she was just so excited to be there. Last week we talked about Cora Jade's first heel promo and how it was good. It could have been better, but it was good. Zoe Stark here, I think, was better than Cora Jade last week, but it still could have been better. Not to say that it was bad. It was still a good promo. I do think there are points when she was overacting a little bit in her facial expressions and whatnot to try and get a point over and some of her gestures. But that's wrestling. I think she can make it look a little more natural if she works on it a bit. What you talked about, I wrote that she looks confident and comfortable in her promo, and that's what came across. She didn't seem like you said, that was scripted. She didn't seem like she didn't know what she was talking about. She didn't seem like she was a deer caught in the headlights. The moment wasn't too big for her. It's not just that this is her first promo since coming back. They asked her to open the show with it. This is how you draw the fans, how you hook the fans in for the rest of the show. And they asked her to do that, and I think she passed. Cora Jade, I think today was a regression in terms of her promo and her character presentation. She also didn't get to say too much, so maybe there just wasn't enough there to work with. Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolan, again, she's good on the mic. She's better than JC Jane in the ring for sure, and Mandy Rose. I do think that – I didn't write this in my report, but the more I think about it, I do think it kind of makes Gigi Dolan seem a bit weak in a sense, that she's the one who challenged Zoe Stark so emphatically, and she was beaten clean in less than 3 minutes. That's not the best sort of follow-up to your challenge to her. Granted, you are a tag team wrestler, I get that. But yeah, it's just, yeah, so there's that. The match was fine. Zoe Stark's been good. She doesn't seem to have any ring rust from having her ACL torn and then coming back in 8 months. Her finisher, it was some kind of like inverted pump handle GTS Fischerized thing that I, overly complicated, but yet dope, which my friend said is 90% of professional wrestling. So if you didn't get a chance, go look at her finisher because it was extremely good. Real quick on Mandy Rose, they set up her, I think, to face Saray next week in a backstage segment. And while I haven't been high on Mandy Rose as a wrestler, her character and her promos have been pretty good. And today was another one of those where she just, Saray comes over, she's like, oh no, here we go again. Did you miss history class? Because Saray's in her kind of like schoolgirl gimmick. And she kind of just laid into Saray. And I think a good night for Mandy Rose on the mic as well tonight.
Real quick.
To your prediction of Heatwave, I think if you're Shawn Michaels and the rest of NXT Creative, and you listen to that reaction that Zoe Stark received when her music hit and when she was giving her promo, you make the change. You make that switch when it's hot right now. You don't continue this title reign of Mandy Rose. You don't continue what people have been just waiting for. People are waiting for it to end more so than wanting it to continue. So you strike when people are ready and hot for this character. You put the title on Zoe Stark and go from there. Having a face, there are more women's wrestlers in the singles division, I think, right now that lean heel than face, which gives Zoe Stark more people to work with. So if I'm Shawn Michaels, I'm making the change right now to say that Zoe Stark is taking the title for Mandy Rose, and it needs to be clean at T-Wave.
In my head, I just started singing, Bruce thinks he's cute. He knows he's sexy, because he said if you were Shawn Michaels. Anyway. Oh, man. Anyway, it's been a long day, folks. It's been a long day. So I agree with you. I think if I'm in a position, a booking position down there, I mean, you know, Zoe's on fire. She had a great reaction from the crowd. People seemed to really like her. I really, really like what she does in the ring. I think she's the total package. So I think putting the title on her would be great. You're absolutely right. There are far more heels in the women's division than there are faces. So it's going to give Zoe many more people to work with. So I think that's fantastic. I did not touch on the match between Gigi and Zoe. I don't have a whole lot to add really that you didn't, that you already said anyway. The one thing that I really kind of wanted to stress was the fact that, you know, again, to open the show, Gigi Dolin places that challenge out to Zoe Stark, saying, you know, she's basically going to wipe the floor with Zoe Stark, and then loses in what was like 3 minutes or something like that. Doesn't really make Toxic Attraction and Gigi Dolin look super strong to like go out and put out with that much conviction that I'm going to kick your ass tonight and then just kind of get completely decimated by Zoe Stark in about 3 minutes or so. So that's really the only thing I wanted to just kind of point out and kind of reiterate. But overall, it was a fair match for what it was. She didn't seem to have any ring rust. Zoe Stark didn't anyway. She really just kind of got back out there and did her thing. So I'm really excited for what the future holds for Zoe Stark. And I'm hoping that I'm hoping we see the title around her waist sooner rather than later. That's just me.
Don't worry, everyone. Nate said reiterate. He didn't just repeat my point for no reason. He said reiterate.
Yes, I did. I did. All right, cool. So we haven't talked about Apollo Crews and Zion Quinn yet. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to talk to about the talking points on this match. Mostly my talking points are revolving around Apollo Crews. Like, what exactly is Apollo Crews doing down in NXT? Every time we've seen somebody come down from the main roster, whether it be Mandy Rose, who's stuck around for about a year now, or AJ Styles, Natalya, they had a clear direction of what they were doing. And Apollo Crews doesn't seem to. He's come down, he's laid claim to the NXT title. Then we saw him as a vigilante in some weird vignette that they haven't really called back to yet, which is really strange. Like, I guess it's not unheard of for them to start a vignette or start like some sort of a gimmick and then completely pull back from it, a week or two later. But there was a lot of like production value in that vignette. It wasn't something that I thought they were going to just completely do away with or never like talk about again. So it's kind of weird. So I'm really confused about Apollo Crews down here. I love the guy. Like, I'm a big fan of his work. I'm happy he's down here, but it's just really strange to me that like he doesn't have some sort of a clear direction. The other thing that's of note too is, with the except, Mandy Rose, obviously she came down to NXT and she stayed, but Natalya and AJ, they did not get listed, and Dolph Ziggler for that matter too. I forgot about Dolph. They were still listed as either SmackDown or Raw wrestlers on the WWE roster on WWE.com, and Paul Cruz is listed as a 2.0 wrestler on WWE.com. So I'm thinking he's down like in NXT, and the fact that he doesn't have a clear direction right now makes me think he's down in NXT for good. I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on that in a second, Bruce. But as far as the match itself goes, was not a bad match at all. It was actually pretty solid match. Zion Quinn, I want to see a little bit. I don't say I don't want to see a little like I want to see a bit more out of him in a character sense. Like, we talked about this in the past where he just kind of comes across as an asshole and that's his gimmick. And if that's it, that's fine. But I don't know. There's like, I feel like there's something missing with Zion Quinn. I can't put my finger on it. He's good in the ring. He's relatively decent on the mic, for developmental.
It's called charisma.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it is the charisma factor, that's lacking. I think that, actually, it might be right. You might have hit the nail on the head for me, there's something about him that just does not click with me, and I feel like he's got the look, he's got the ability, but I think you might be right. It might be the charisma. I'll throw it to you.
So with Apollo Crews, I think that he's someone that Triple H wanted to work with a lot more in NXT before Vince took him from him. So now that, he's back and Vince kind of has creative control, even though Shawn Michaels will be the day-to-day person, I think that see the Apollo Crews that was supposed to happen in, 2016 or whatever when he signed, 2015. So that's all I can really add at this point. I'm not sure what we're supposed to I'm not even sure if we're supposed to think of those vignettes as canon anymore. So there's that. Regarding the match, the only thing I'll add is a one-arm spinebuster actually ended a match, and it wasn't from Bobby Lashley. So, yeah.
And what a one-arm spinebuster it was. All right, cool. So let's jump over to Andre Chase versus Giovanni Vinci. So shortly before the match, there Thea Hale, Bodie Hayward, and Chase, Andre Chase are backstage kind of getting hyped up for the match and doing what they do, being annoying yet endearing at the same time. Thea Hale, I want to point her out real quick. I think she might be one of my favorite things to watch on NXT right now. And in the ring, we've only seen her in the ring, I think, once or twice. And I don't think I was like overly impressed with her in the ring, but her charisma and like is off the charts. She definitely stands out when she's on screen. She's overacting, but I think it's part of the gimmick. I don't know. I'd want to talk to Kelly on that, being the acting guy, but still, I personally like the way she's coming across with her acting and everything. She almost seems like that annoying sister that wants to like do everything with you, or something like that. But it's working. It's working for me. It's very endearing, I think. And I think she's doing a damn good job. Bodie as well. Bodie, for that matter, he's doing a fantastic job of being a hype man for Chase U and Andre Chase in general. But yeah, the match against Giovanni Vinci, this was actually surprisingly a good match and a surprisingly a long match. I really, because like Chase, usually, you know, he's out there and he's, you know, he'll put on a halfway decent match, but he winds up staring at the lights. He doesn't get many wins. I really, and where Giovanni Vinci is, you know, relatively new character and he's starting to get, you know, pushed right now. I thought that we were going to see Vinci go over in like 3 minutes, you know, 4 minutes tops. And I don't have the time in front of me right now, but I know Bruce, I know you probably have it. But it seems like this match went like 10, 12 minutes long. And there were a lot of false finishes in the match where I thought like Chase might actually pick up a win. So I think this is actually good things for both Giovanni Vinci and Chase. You know, Chase was, you know, given a lot of time in this match. He was given a lot of time to shine. And Giovanni Vinci obviously did go over, but wasn't for lack of trying. So overall, I think this is a great match. I'm really high on Chase University, and I even like 2 weeks ago, I don't think I would have said that. Two or three weeks ago, I don't think I would have said that. Like I'd say, like, yeah, they're fun, but something about the last couple weeks with them, they've kind of really won me over. And this week in particular, when they came up on screen with that backstage vignette, I was actually kind of excited to see them. I was pumped to see them. So I think they finally may have gotten themselves over with me anyway. Bruce, on Chase and Vinci. I think you're muted. Or I lost you.
I pulled an eight.
Okay.
Yeah, no, the match was 12:26, so and it went through commercial break, so it was long.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought it was in like the 12-minute space.
It was a good match. So if I'm looking at this from a macro perspective, I think my biggest issue is that this match was about three times the length of the longest Andre Chase singles match that I can remember. He usually gets pinned in around 3 to 4 minutes. So for that to happen in Vinci, who was supposed to be, I mean, didn't he just beat Apollo Crews a week or two ago, emphatically? For someone like Vinci, who was billed as this big, hot thing, come in and then struggle with someone who rarely goes beyond 3 or 4 minutes, again, it kind of goes back to the whole Gigi Dolan challenging thing and then being laid out so quickly. This one having it go so long. Granted, there are times in sports when certain teams, certain players, certain competitors play well against certain others, and they do not so well against the other ones. So it could be some of the – you could work that into a story here. It seems like with what Vinci did to the flag and pushing Hayward, that he's probably going to face Bodie Hayward next, and maybe even eventually the two of them in a two-on-one handicap match. We could see. It might not go that far, but he might just take out Hayward next. You know, Chase has skills in terms. He has a good amount of grappling skill that he can show. He sells well. The gimmick, however, is very limiting in what he can do, which we can talk about with Monday 2 later as well. The match, again, it was fine. I like that they gave the false finish of Chase hitting his finisher, which is called, Final Exam, of course, only for Vinci to kick out, and then Vinci did his finisher and then end it like that. I think it was well done in that regard and well told, because Chase hasn't been shown to be someone who, you know, even if they land their finisher, to be someone that can finish matches. So, and that powerbomb right now is very protected. Even though it's only been a couple of weeks, it's very protected. No one is even giving a hint of kicking out of that move. So I think for me, moving forward, Chase U is going to be Chase U. They're where they are. Thea Hale probably has the most potential to come out of that group as something more, just be based off of her exuberance and charisma that she possesses that, you know, Zion Quinn doesn't possess. But for Vinci, it's, okay, are you going to be at this level, or is this the build to making you someone that is going to challenge for one of the top two titles? That is the next phase that I'm going to be looking at with Giovanni Vinci.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they need to get him in the North American title scene. I was going to say sooner rather than later. I don't want to see it happen like next week or, you know, maybe even this summer, but I think it should happen soon. If the plan is to get him to be, you know, kind of a main event player, which I don't know, I feel like this character kind of could be, it's certainly a character we've seen before. You know, I mean, heck, Dean Malenko did a Playboy type gimmick at one point, you know. I feel like this also has some shades of Cesaro in there. You know, you have at least one incarnation of Cesaro anyway. So it's certainly a gimmick we've seen before, but I feel like it's also different enough where, you know, yeah, you might draw some of the comparisons that I just drew, but it's also different enough where it can stand on its own. Fabian Eich, or Giovanni Vinci, I still want to call him Fabian Eichner.
You know how many times I almost put Eichner in my report tonight?
Yeah, I know. And you know what the funny thing is Kaiser, Ludwig Kaiser, I can't even remember what the hell his name used to be. I was thinking of that the other day.
Marcel Bartel,
thank you. I was listening to Wade's post show on SmackDown, and he brought up Kaiser, and I was like trying to think, what the hell was his name? So thank you. But yeah, Giovanni Da Vinci, I mean, I feel like this character, like I said, is different enough from these other incarnations of like the Playboy character where it could get over. He's fantastic in the ring. And like you said, that power bomb, not only is it protected, holy shit, is it beautiful. He pulls that off like nobody else. It's an incredible looking power bomb. So yeah, I would like to see him get into the North American title picture at some point in the near future. It's not going to happen against Carmelo Hayes unless somebody has some sort of a turn, whether, you know, Hayes turns face or Giovanni turns face. They're not going to do heel versus heel for the title anyway. But I think he needs to get in there at some point in the near future. I definitely agree with you there. All right, so let's go down now to what haven't we touched on yet? I think the last match we haven't touched on was something we don't even really need to take too much time on, Ariana Grace and Indy Hartwell. I don't know. Earlier in the show, the two women kind of got in a bit of a scrap backstage, where Ariana Grace is basically just kind of like making fun of Indy Hartwell and things like that. After some of the shenanigans last week, Indy Hartwell overheard it and kind of got into a little bit of a heated argument backstage leading to this match. I don't know, as much as I like Indy, I feel like if she's in the ring against a veteran, she's going to have a good match. But if she's the veteran in the ring, it's going to be a passable match, but just passable. And that's kind of what I felt about this tonight. It wasn't great. It was short. It as it should have been. There were parts of this match that looked, and I wrote this in the hits and misses, that looked almost robotic looking. And by that, I mean just very scripted and very choreographed. It didn't look like they were out there, you know, fighting. It looked like they were out there like, and especially Ariana Grace, it looked like she was kind of out there just trying to remember all the steps she had to do. I hate to be down on it, but I it was the only miss actually in the hits and misses this week for NXT 2.0, which is actually saying something for 2.0 because I think since last September when NXT became NXT 2.0, I've had at least like a couple misses, if not, you know, a lot of misses, like mostly misses in the hits and misses. And this is the only one here tonight. Any thoughts on Grace versus Hartwell?
I wrote that. So, positive first. Ariana Grace at least has a she has defined character traits, if not a defined character, and she seems comfortable with those character traits that she has. I believe Grace is the daughter of Santino, if I'm remembering correctly.
You are remembering correctly.
Okay. The match, I wrote in my report that this match is going on neither woman's highlight reel. That's all you really need to know. But also, if you are developmental, these are some of the matches that you are going to inevitably have when you put them on TV. So it's part and parcel of what NXT 2.0 is now. And we have to remember that that is sort of the process, and we can't, again, the recalibration, if it hasn't already happened, needs to happen again. And also in this regard, that we are going to see matches more and more like this than we used to in the black and gold days, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's more resembling the 8 years back NXT. Well, the 8 years back right now, I'm looking at, is sort of when the shift is starting to happen. So if you go back maybe to like 2013-ish NXT, these are the types of matches you're going to see more there than you did during black and gold.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
All right. So with that said, I, even though Kelly told me earlier in the week that he wasn't going to be here and I knew I was going to have to host a show, I completely forgot that I was going to have to host a show tonight until about 10:30 when I was like, Kelly, where are you? And Kelly's like, I'm not showing up tonight. So I don't actually like usually when I host, I'll write up some notes and with every single segment and everything. I don't have that to run through all the segments tonight.
I think that's gonna some of the stuff you missed.
Yeah, well, so what I was thinking is I know we want to try and get out of here at some point in the near future. So I'm going to talk about at least a couple of segments that I want to talk about. I'm going to throw it to you. Touch on those if you want. Touch on anything else that you want, and then we'll head home. So the first thing I wanted to bring up was the Wendy Choo segment. I'm actually really excited about this. I'm really intrigued about it. It was different. It was kind of dark. Wendy Choo, you basically I thought she was like waking up from a dream, but then it didn't seem like it was a dream. She turned around, she looked at the camera, and she didn't have like that Wendy Choo, you know, I'm a tired kid type accent. She like talked like an actual woman and like spoke directly into the camera. And it was kind of was a little intimidating, I guess, in a way. I'm really looking forward to see what actually happens with this, like with Wendy Choo, if we kind of see almost like Saray, where she's a schoolgirl one minute and then she's a superhero. Are we going to see some sort of a shift where, you know, all of a sudden, like next week, Wendy Choo comes out and she's like a completely different character that's much more serious. And then, you know, after the match, you know, maybe she reverts back to this, you know, this incarnation of the character, and you know, kind of like Finn Balor would only bring out the demon when he needed to. Maybe there's something like that with her here. I don't know. I might be reading too much into it, but this is the first time that I've actually been intrigued by something that Wendy Choo is doing, and in a good way. I've been intrigued in the past, but it's mostly just been like, okay, why are they doing this? And I want to see where it goes because this is stupid. Now I'm kind of like, okay, you've intrigued me. You've got my attention. What are you going to be doing from here? So that's definitely something that I'm going to be looking forward to and keep my eye on as we go forward. Second thing that I wanted to bring up was Joe Gacy and the Dyad, which they're now calling the group the Schism, which – it's weird because you've already got a tag team in the group called Dyad, and now you're calling, if you just add Joe Gacy to the mix, you're now called Schism. So, okay, I don't know. I feel like that just confuses things a little bit. You know, whatever. I guess it's not unheard of to have a tag team in a stable. I mean, you had the New Age Outlaws in D-Generation X, right, I guess? But still, they were also more established then. Regardless, whatever. We heard Grizzled Young Vets or the Dyad, as they're now called, actually talk tonight we had them talk, I guess, last week too. But the, you know, Gibson talked a little bit tonight. It was Drake who talked a little bit tonight.
They both talked.
But I always get the two of them confused. Drake. Drake was always the one that was quiet. He actually had, you know, had some input tonight. It's weird because like I miss the Grizzled Young Vets. I don't think they needed an overhaul of their characters whatsoever, but I'm also intrigued to see how they wind up portraying the Dyad going forward. Because we know how good they are both in the ring and as well as the character work. We know how good they are, but How is that going to necessarily translate to these new dark brooding, you know, more brooding characters? I feel like they have the ability to pull it off. And I'm hoping they pull it off better than we think they're going to pull it off. And it actually is a bit more of a success than I think it probably will be. I'm interested to see, you know, where that winds up and where that goes. So those are the two things that I kind of just wanted to bring up and touch on real quick. Feel free to touch on those, anything else. And then if I've got a follow up on anything, I will, and then we'll get out of here.
So as I said, before we went on air, the Wendy Chu vignette was really jarring because it seemed like she was in a nightmare, but then she was rolling around restlessly in bed, making me think maybe those are just her thoughts that were preventing her from falling asleep. And then she slammed the body pillow, and then she, of course, when you go a bit broody, guy has the dark makeup, right? So she has dark eyeliner on, and then she goes from acting like there is no camera where she was, which seemed like a dream dimension for all I knew, to all of a sudden being like in a bathroom mirror and then turning to face the camera and breaking that fourth wall. It was just jarring. Jarring is the best word I can use to describe it. The I'm not sure if they're actually going to get rid of the gimmick that she's doing now or make tweaks to it, or maybe she becomes like a Freddy Krueger gimmick or some shit, you know, or something, you know, like someone who uses nightmares to fuel her or something instead of the happy-go-lucky narcoleptic queen or whatever. So, it's intriguing, but and this could be one of those things where Triple H is like, nah, we got to change it. And this is, you know, he's making this one a hard shift right away. Who knows? When it comes to the Dyad and Schism, the less that's talked about, the better. One of the segments that you didn't bring up that I want to just briefly touch on is Kiana James stealing Drew Gulak's gimmick and presenting a PowerPoint presentation on Nikita Lyons, which I admit Nikita Lyons is what's wrong with the women's division. So I'll give her that. I'll say that. But she also used the same PowerPoint like design that I would use during my when I taught my classes. So that gave me a good laugh. So there's that.
I actually I'm listening to Kiana James the whole time going, okay, Kiana, I like you more now. I like you more.
The vignette was terrible, but because it was about Nikita Lyons and her, you know, bringing her down a bit because all the reasons. I mean, it's funny because like all the reasons she pointed out were a lot of the reasons that people have been kind of low on her besides her in-ring work. So there's that. Before I get to the one big segment we missed, I have to say, Solo Sikoa is ready for the main roster. He's ready for our SmackDown. That vignette, I mean, that looked like the Fatu brothers out there filming one on the streets talking about the Uso Penitentiary. You know, he is definitely ready. It wouldn't surprise me to see him lose next week to Von Wagner. This is the type of match where nothing is clean, so I don't think he would suffer anything if he did lose, especially because Mr. Stone is likely to get involved and have some shenanigans and whatnot, and then they move him to maybe he's the reason that Roman Reigns retained at SummerSlam. They debut him there, and he somehow causes Brock Lesnar to lose the match. With Von Wagner, it was interesting that he pointed out he doesn't give a shit, as he quoted, if Sophia Cromwell wants to go and be a model anymore, because she is who's supposed to be replacing Max Dupree as the head of Maximum Male Models. He is Maxime Dupree. So no more Sophia Cromwell, which, again, just shattered a storyline in NXT that was going for a long time between those two. So Wagner's probably going over next week. If they saw what I saw and they're like, yeah, he's not – There's nothing for him to do in NXT. Like he's not growing anymore there. He's outgrown NXT and needs to definitely move to a place where he's going to be challenged more, and that is Raw or SmackDown. The big one that we didn't touch on was JD McDonagh, quote unquote, introducing himself.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand what they're trying to do here. They're trying to get over that he is very intimate or has very intimate knowledge of the human anatomy and can work it how he wants to, whether that's as he showed with Wade Barrett, the calcium deposits in his hand from bare knuckle boxing, and then it's kind of subtly slamming and gripping his hand into the announce table, and then going over to Vic Softbones Joseph and saying, I could break the collarbone right now with my bare hands if I wanted to, but I won't. And really just like pressuring on the collarbone of Joseph. He went to the timekeeper and said, you know, this is the hammer they use. Do you know how much damage a hammer can do to the human hand? Don't even need that much pressure. And I will say, he's like, Alicia Taylor, you have a beautiful voice. Smart man not to attack Alicia Taylor. That would have been a bad, bad move. So again, I understand what they're trying to do. But the point, I believe, was a bit belabored. It took too long to get there. He was a bit too methodical in his pacing of his promo, in my opinion. I believe if they were to cut out the first part and just gone straight from him going to the crowd down to Joseph and Barrett and doing that stuff there, which admittedly is hard to see if you're in the crowd, I think that would have been a better way to get over what his character is in NXT, which is basically someone who is so proficient that he is someone who can basically use his body as a scalpel on his opponent's bodies.
No, fair enough. And actually, so I kind of disagree with you a little bit on like how like plotting and everything. I personally thought it worked great. I really dug the segment. I kind of hear where you're coming from, and I think, you know, there's probably people out there that would certainly agree with you. I don't know. I really dug it, because especially when he was out in the crowd and like talking with like the kid who had the popcorn, you know, he was talking about how you choke on popcorn and stuff.
It was a middle-aged man. He was like our age, Nate.
Well, whatever. Right. But you know, I mean, hell, I still say kid when I'm talking to my friends that are my age. How was I saying? Oh yeah. So the dude that had the popcorn, what he was saying just kind of came off the cuff. Like, it didn't seem like he was actually scripted. Like, he actually sounded like he was talking, like, from, you know, the heart. And actually, like, you know, he went out, he was basically just given a mic and said, hey, go pick on some people in the crowd, you know, before he wound up getting the timekeeper and Barrett and everything. And that actually I kind of dug that. I like those interactions between, you know, wrestlers and the fans. I feel like, you know, it kind of gets people more invested and involved. I don't know. I just, everything about it, it hit for me. It worked for me. But I certainly see your point. I can definitely see your point. Because if it wasn't working for you, then yeah, that probably seemed like a long segment to just kind of sit there and listen to some dude, you know, talk about human anatomy. So, definitely. Is there anything else? Anything else you want to bring up?
The last thing I want to bring up, it's regarding the Fatal 4-Way next week with the women's tag team. So the teams are Carter and Chance, Leon and Froyce, Tatum Paxley, Ivy Nile, and Toxic Attraction. You know, that's fine. If I had to pick a team out of those four, I mean, I don't think they're going to go back to Toxic Attraction, which means the only team that's left is Carter and Chance. But Carter and Chance have also been acting like straight up a-holes to other people the last couple of weeks because they feel cheated out of the titles. So I'm not really, how do I put this? People might want them to be the winners, but I'm not invested in them winning because of how their characters have seemed to be so dichotomous to how they're presented when they enter and when they wrestle a match, right? Their characters during promos and interviews seem a lot more aggressive than what they show, and they go out and they're more happy and entertainment-y and everything like that. But this brings me back to Roxanne Perez. So at the end of the show, after the eight-man tag team match, Mackenzie Mitchell was in the back, and she was talking to Roxanne Perez, and Roxanne made her come back. She made her return tonight. She chased off Cora Jade earlier in the night. Mitchell asked Perez, you know, how she's feeling, and she brought up how she felt disrespected because her friend threw away her friendship. But she said what was even more disrespectful was the title was being thrown in the trash. So for her, you know, your however many years long friendship, throwing that away, that's fine, whatever, I can get over that. But you put the titles in the trash, oh my gosh, that is too disrespectful. All right, so that's besides the point. Is Alundra Blaze came out, and Alundra Blaze presented Roxanne with the trash can from last week, which, as Rich Fan noted, or not Rich Fan, my colleague at Daily DDT noted, did no one else use that trash can during the week? Well,
yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Like, isn't there a janitorial crew that, like, empties the trash here and there, you know? Bruce, did I lose you? Uh-oh.
Hey, Nick, can you hear me?
Hey, I can hear you now.
Okay, that was weird. I was there, and then I just muted and unmuted myself, and I'm back.
Okay.
At the end of the show, so after that, Alundra Blaze was leaving, and she still had that other tag team title in her hand, even though Roxanne Perez is the one who retrieved it from the trash can. And then Toxic Attraction approached her and asked Blaze to be – well, didn't ask her. They pretty much told her to give them the belt, the title. And Blaze said they had to earn it and walked off. Now, while we were recording, Wayne Hollinger commented on my report and wondered if Alundra Blaze is going to be a manager for someone moving forward. I think she might be Roxanne Perez's manager moving forward at this, with how tonight played out. Perez has no more tag team partner, which with how they set the match up next week means that she has to unfortunately vacate the tag team championship that she won. I'm not going to spoil it here in case you haven't seen, but Cora Jade also has a new manager that they're working with on house shows. So this could be a way for, even though Cora Jade's manager is a dude, this could be a way for Roxanne Perez to even the odds because, I mean, Alundra Blaze is a Hall of Famer, former champion, and all that. So if there is going to be a manager from Alundra, or someone to manage for Alundra Blaze, I believe it will be Roxanne Perez based off tonight's interactions.
Yeah, and you know, I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Alundra Blaze. I want to keep calling her Medusa for some reason. I guess I could. It was her name.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing her, you know, back in the company a little bit and doing something, you know, kind of akin to like what Ted DiBiase did with I almost said Corey Graves. Jesus. Cameron Grimes. Same initials, different person by a long shot. I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. I think when you take a legend like that and you kind of have them like rub some elbows against, you know, newbie, I mean, it's just instant credibility. So I don't think that would be a bad thing at all. I'd be all for it. Definitely be all for it. So I think with that, we're going to wrap up the show here tonight, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up tonight on pwtorch.com for you guys. Again, next week, if you do want to call in, that's 515-605-9345. Feel free to call in. Hit 1 to let us know that you want to talk. You could also send an email to pwtorchnxt@gmail.com and be part of the show. Bruce, say goodbye.
I'll say more than just that this time. I'm
right.
Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. I am one of the two live reporters for NXT, along with Kelly Wells, who, as Nate said earlier, was on G1 duty tonight. I may or may not be on the show next week as we are moving this Saturday into the great city of Honolulu. So, you know, if I'm not here next week, enjoy. If I am, I will talk to you next week.
Well, you know what? Have fun moving, because that always
sucks.
But not as bad
as when I moved here from Seattle. So,
yeah, that's right. But no, good luck on the move, man. Good luck on the move.
Thank you.
All right, guys, and to steal a line from Kelly, we'll see you in 7.